Welcome, everyone, to episode 379 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and just as quickly as it started, free agency is already almost wrapped up. Most of the big names are off the board, so we're going to catch up on what's happened since we last recorded on Saturday. Again, we're not going to have time to get through every name, but we're going to try to at least hit the biggest, most impactful names, trades, all that good stuff. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. We are recording today's episode live on Locker Room, so if you have an iOS device, download the Locker Room app from the App Store. Come hang out. You can ask questions, even speak with us live. They are working on an Android version too, just for those of you who hate Apple like I do. With all that said, joining me today, as always, is a guy who is hopefully starting to go to bed at a normal hour. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going well, and I am, yes, and it's been very weird. So the first 3 days that I tried getting to bed at a reasonable hour, I was up to like 5 a.m. just like churning in bed because I had gotten used to everything else. And when the season starts all over again on the December 22nd, oh boy, my body's not going to thank me. Let's just put it that way.
Sure. That is fair. Well, you get at least a month off-ish because, yeah, I mean, honestly, we're still waiting on a couple big developments. Anthony Davis has yet to sign his extension that he's inevitably going to with the Lakers. It's just a matter of how long it is. You know, the big domino yet to fall is Giannis, but that still won't affect anything this year. He wouldn't be a free agent until next summer. He has yet to sign the Supermax extension, but we got a pretty clear indication that some team at least is assuming he's going to. Because on Tuesday afternoon, the Miami Heat, according to Tim Reynolds, are going to sign Bam Adebayo to a 5-year, $163 million max extension. This shouldn't come as a surprise that he's getting that type of money. He's an all-NBA right. player. He's fantastic. He's only going to get better. He's clearly the future of that franchise. The surprising thing is that they're doing it now instead of waiting for next offseason. Because by virtue of doing it now, his extension number is going to be on their books right away. So when free agency starts, whenever it does next year, he'll be on the books for $30-some million instead of his cap hold, which was supposed to be a lot lower. So the Heat have famously been yearning after Giannis for a year plus now, and it seemed like they had structured all of their moves to make a run at him. By signing Bam to a max extension now, that cuts off their ability to have max cap room next offseason. So Mort, what do you make of all of this?
Well, obviously they've heard he's going to Dallas, so
they saw that report yesterday from Windhorst where it's like AD is waiting to sign his deal because if Giannis doesn't sign his, they're going to tamper him to LA.
Yeah. Oh boy, that would be fantastic. Yeah.
Would it be?
No, fantastic? I think the Heat knows that why else would they, make this move now? Unless, of course, this was just a requirement from Bam Adebayo's team that, don't disrespect me.
Yeah.
Let's get this done. There could be several factors into this. Remember when the season ended and Giannis started unfollowing everyone on social media and everyone panicked? And, these things don't necessarily always go hand in hand. We like to play Sherlock Holmes all the time, but sometimes things just get done because of certain ways. And also, I want to give a shout out to Jason Pat, friend of the podcast, because he made a pretty good point as well on Twitter, basically saying, contracts, they don't really matter as much. When a star wants to go somewhere, even if that team is capped the F out, they'll find a way.
Yeah.
It happens. Like if a star wants somewhere, goes to somewhere specifically, he'll find a way to get there. Yeah. So I'm not really that concerned.
Yeah.
if I'm a Heat fan, I still think there are several avenues, somehow, some way, that if Giannis wants to go there, he'll end up there.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it last year with the Heat, right? Where they entered the offseason way over the cap, and they still ended up with Jimmy Butler. So,
right.
Yes, I think, you know, there are ways around it. With that said, it's a lot more difficult now than it would have been 20, you know, a lot more difficult to envision them carving out max cap space next summer than it was 24 hours ago pre-BAM extension. So it's at least right. sending a strong signal that they don't think they're getting Giannis and they don't think they're getting another star free agent, because I don't think they make this move if they do believe that they are. And you know, hey, maybe they're just willing, like, this team went to the NBA finals. Maybe they're just willing to build around the core that they have, and that's not a bad gamble, especially, you know, Tyler Hero is so young, he's only going to continue to develop. They got Precious Achiuwa in the draft, you know, Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn, a bit older for rookies than, you know, they're not 19, but still, like, have such relative inexperience that I think you can project both of them to get better. So,
right.
And it's not like any team in the East got substantially better this offseason. Like, you know, teams have improved, but I think
I agree with that.
I think, you know, two or three of the biggest winners of the offseason are all in the West. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe they just might feel pretty good about where their roster is, and they say, hey, you know, we could still have 15, 20 million in cap space next summer to round out the edges, but we don't need to go star hunting for this third star. Like, we're pretty confident in our two-star model.
As they should be. It worked, and, you know, they got Avery Bradley as well,
mm-hmm.
who, from a culture perspective and, like, a Heat fit perspective, should be perfect for them.
Yeah.
So I do think Miami has this tendency once in a while to, yeah, they can think big picture like they did in 2010, but they're also that team that never really bottoms all the way out because they want to see what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And look, they saw what they had last season, and that was, like you said, that was a finals run. They saw the evolution of Bam Adebayo, and they just figured, okay, our ceiling is pretty big, so maybe let's just stick with that instead of, you know, leaning on hope for some theory that might even not pan out. So, I respect them for keeping Bam going. And look, he'll attract free agents down the line as well. I don't think we should forget that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Jimmy Butler is not going to be with that team forever. He's already on the wrong side of 30. I mean, he is the culture setter, the tone setter, I guess you should say, for now, but... Yeah, could you envision a year or two down the line if, you know, there's a disgruntled star that he's the big piece they flip for that younger star? Like, he could be the centerpiece of
easy.
A Bradley Beal trade or a Devin Booker trade or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Especially, you know, if things continue to go well in Miami and Jimmy continues to, you know, the perception of him going into Miami, seeing how he kind of forced his way out of Minnesota in particular, you know, I think he had perhaps an unfair reputation of being difficult to work with and difficult to play with, and you have to kind of cater your whole roster around him. But then, you know, seeing what he's done in Miami, it's like, oh, okay, this guy can really, you know, he could be like that CP3 type who, like, you bring him in and he just changes everything about your team. So for a team like Phoenix or like Sacramento that, or even the Knicks, you know, that have been out of the playoffs for so long, they might be attracted to someone like that, even though he's on the wrong side of 30 and not getting any younger.
Right. So you're saying RJ Barrett is going to be a Heat?
RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Bam Adebayo, I could rock with that. Yeah.
Yeah. One name I actually think could be interesting down the line, if things just gets muddy in Utah, is Donovan Mitchell.
Mm.
But, I mean, I would take a Mitchell Adebayo pairing
and fill
out the roster around those two.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Mitchell did just sign a 5-year max extension, so,
yeah,
you know, that's definitely at least 2 or 3 years down the line.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Not now. No.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, if Utah just regresses. That, right. I don't necessarily think they will, but who knows? This is a crazy-ass league.
Yeah, that's true. So let's go, I guess, technically north, because it was Toronto who lost both of these guys. So Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol are both leaving Toronto. Marc Gasol is signing a two-year, $5.3 million deal with the Lakers, according to Shams, which is just a two-year minimum deal. Serge Ibaka, 2 years, I believe it was $19 million, which would be the whole mid-level exception for the Clippers. So let's start with the Lakers, Mort. Marc Gasol and a min deal. Like, I mean, we were saying even before they got him that, you know, they've gotten substantially better this offseason than no one else in the West. Like, no one in that top tier really had. Like, should the Lakers go into this season as the overwhelming title favorites now?
I think so. Normally, I probably would have picked Milwaukee, given their roster upgrades. But after what we saw from Coach Bud in the playoffs, I'm just skeptical.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and that's... Look, I'm actually not trying to hate on the guy, but that was the big question for everyone, and that was he adaptable? And for the second year in a row, he wasn't. So is that going to change going into year three? I mean, I hope so, but I don't know. And until I know, I'm going to put the Lakers ahead of the curve here.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Look at their roster. Look at their roster.
Yeah.
They can actually put Montrezl Harrell on the bench. Like, a lot of Lakers fans were saying, oh, he's our new center.
Ooh.
And, like, no. That's Marc Gasol. Like, that lineup is set now. And then you have Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell coming off the pine. Like, that offense is going to take care of itself. I'm not worried about anything. Like, you can even stagger the minutes so you can actually have Gasol play a bunch of bench minutes as well, and him actually being, like, the primary playmaker because he can do that.
Mm-hmm.
The variations are sick. Like, the Lakers are just, they've done such a tremendous job this offseason.
Yeah, they also re-signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 3 years, $40 million, according to Shams, and then got Markieff Morris back on a min deal as well. So yeah, I mean,
oh, I have thoughts on that, the KCP deal.
Oh yeah,
I think that's like a trade contract piece. Mm-hmm. Because look, yeah he was stable and whatnot, and like when most people would look at that salary, they'll go, oh, okay, that's fine. It's really not. Like, he isn't that good. That is an overpay in my perspective, but not to the extent where teams would look at it and go, oh, that's horrible.
Right.
Like, this is not a drastic overpay by any means, but it's a large contract that does allow them to make moves at the trade deadline or next summer, because you can just match contracts easier if you have someone earning over $10 million. It's basic math. And it's something we've talked about a couple episodes ago. Like, sometimes teams will just sign or re-sign a guy to a certain value, mm-hmm. with the entire intent of just trading him afterwards or including him in a trade package. So I don't think KCP is being re-signed to keep.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's that plus Clutch Mafia coming in. He is represented by Rich Paul, who also just happens coincidentally to represent like half of the Lakers roster, including LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So... Right. I think part of this is definitely, you know, J.R. Smith got a similar bump in Cleveland after they won the title, and they immediately grew to regret that. Do I think that's going to happen with KCP to that extent? Probably not. But, you know, I think it's definitely part of it was just, like, keep the agency of your two biggest stars happy by overpaying some of your lower-tier players. But, no, you're totally right. Like, that is a great salary-matching chip. You know, if they decided to flip Kuzma plus KCP for someone else.
Oh, they should. They really should. Because, like, the Lakers should not want to get into the whole Kyle Kuzma restricted free agency business next year.
Mm-hmm. No.
They really should. No. Just avoid that at all costs. Like, I think I was surprised to see him still being on the roster at this point. So, you know, I think it's a trade deadline at the latest, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's hard to, like, I'm trying to think of their starting five is probably going to be Wes Matthews, KCP, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, with now Dennis Schroeder, Markieff Morris, Montrezl Harrell off the bench. Like, unless you're playing Kuzma at the three, Harrell at the, or Markieff at the three, like, there's, you got a front court logjam here where you've got, you know, five guys probably who deserve rotation minutes. And that's, you know, assuming LeBron plays the three full time, which he shouldn't, he'll play the four at times too. So,
yep. Davis will move up to the big spot at center as well. I just can't wait for the Christmas Day graphics on the Lakers game to show, you know, Kyle Kuzma, 10 minutes a game, 5.4 points per night.
Yeah.
39% shooting.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it would not shock me if he's not long for that team, but I'm with you. I mean, I think the Lakers have gotten, like, if you just look at it, they brought in Wes Matthews, Schroeder, Gasol, Montrez. They lost Danny Green, Avery Bradley, Dwight Howard, Rajon Rondo. Like, they significantly upgraded in terms of talent. And Marc Gasol, I mean, I know he's not what he was in his prime. You're not going to rely on him as a 20-point-per-game scorer, but you don't need to in that lineup. Right. And his passing vision and passing ability, pairing him with LeBron just seems unfair, man. He's such an upgrade over what they had last year, with all due respect to JaVale and especially Dwight Howard, who played well with them in a limited role. But going from JaVale and Dwight to Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell, it's lights out, I think.
Have you noticed a theme? Because what I've noticed is the Lakers have more or less geared up on players who can take individual responsibilities off of LeBron. So Marc Gasol can take some of the playmaking responsibility off of him. Dennis Schroeder can take some of the scoring off of him. Montrezl Harrell, while not necessarily a great rebounder, is very active around the basket, so conceivably should be able to work the glass a little bit more, thus allowing Bron to not having to do everything. I wouldn't even be shocked whatsoever if LeBron has a year that statistically is very reminiscent of like his rookie year, which is like 20 points, a little over 5 rebounds, a little over, you know, 5 assists, which obviously does not tell the full story. It's not like he's declined in, you know, in quality whatsoever, but just the fact that it would be by design, that the team would go, you know what, you don't have to be the near triple double guy anymore. You just don't need that in the regular season. Like, you, who cares? You're 75 years old. You don't need that. It's fine. Like, screw the stats. Just let everybody else go get them and then save your legs for the playoffs.
Well,
why not?
Especially since, you know, they're coming off of a finals run that ended in mid-October. Like, LeBron has been pretty vocal about how pissed he was that the season is coming back so quickly. And, you know, he's joked about, like, not playing very hard at the start of the year, but I don't think we are going to see the version of LeBron we saw last year during the regular season was something we hadn't seen really in the past half decade or so.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're going to see, like, 2018 Cleveland LeBron this year in the regular season, where he is just on 70% cruise control for much of the year. Just, like, keep me healthy, get us in the playoffs, and then we can turn it on.
Yeah. That wouldn't shock. And it would be the right play, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So let's go to their crosstown rival, the Clippers, who lost Montrezl Harrell to the Lakers, but they're bringing in Serge Ibaka as his replacement. What do you think? Yeah.
Upgrade. Right? Yeah, so we were actually pretty negative about what the Clippers have done, and it seems to me that when I'm browsing Twitter, people are still down on what the Clippers have done. Overall, I'm actually okay, because you're getting a more reliable player in Serge Ibaka, who does have a prior relationship with Kawhi. This matters greatly. Mm-hmm. They won a championship together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got Luke Kennard in there, who is, when healthy, a very efficient pick-and-roll player, a great efficient shooter. And he, I think, would take over a lot of the shots that Lou Williams usually takes, because I think Lou is, I don't want to say done, but I don't think he's the Lou that we know for a couple years back. I think we've seen a new Lou, and that is, hi, I'm old. And I don't think that's the guy moving forward. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Luke Kennard get in there. So I think they upgraded in two very essential spots. And then if you get Paul George back to just stable mood and Kawhi is engaged, this team could make noise. But did they improve as much as the Lakers? Hell no.
Right. Right. No, I think that is the exact right way. You know, I'm going to write something for Fansided later this week, I think, about like teams that got significantly better, teams that got significantly worse. Lakers, number one with a bullet on teams that got better. Clippers are not going to be in my top five. You know, no, I think
I don't think so either.
They did get better for sure. You know, Kennard is an upgrade over Shamet when healthy. Ibaka is an upgrade over Montrez. Maybe not in terms of like raw talent or like in terms of points per game or like stats per game. Montrez is going to put up, like, I'm not expecting Ibaka to have 18-7 or whatever Montrez had last year. But right. But the role that they need Ibaka to fill, especially in the playoffs, like, he's not going to get played off the floor like Montrez did in that Denver series.
Agreed.
Like, yeah.
I do have a hot take, though, about the Clippers.
Okay, hit me.
Because something we seem to be forgetting is internal improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Ivica Zubac.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going there.
No, but I mean, look, here's the thing. I'm not wrong.
No, I know.
He is legitimately good. I know people are, you know, have a tendency to look at him and go, oh, he's just a big Euro. Like, he doesn't shoot threes. That's fine, because you know what he does? He scores at an elite clip. He hits his three throws. He's an utter, ridiculously elite rebounder. And he has improved as a defender to the point where I would argue he's actually good. Not just on the crust, but good, but like good. And he'll now get, what, at least a 12-minute increase? Like 30 minutes a game? We could see a guy who next year is like at 16-12. That with two blocks per game and high efficiency scoring numbers, and who is a truly valuable defender as opposed to like a Hassan Whiteside who gets the blocks but isn't necessarily a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so with that comes a higher ceiling as well. So I am curious to see what these guys can do. Absolutely. And Zubac, he would be among the candidates for MIP. I'm absolutely sure of it.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, the Clippers were one of the deepest teams last year. I think they've lost some of that this offseason. Yeah. But if you just look at, you know, their theoretical top eight or so for the playoffs, it's going to be Kawhi, Paul George, Marcus Morris, Lou Williams, Serge Ibaka, Zubac, Luke Kennard, Pat Bev.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I'm ready to rock with that top eight.
Yep, yep. I am too. I think that's fine, especially if Lou gets a little bit of a smaller role, so he can bring it in smaller doses, so he needn't be that 18-point guy all the time. Just, okay, like, he's being set up by Luke Kennard, getting the right shots. I still feel they need a bit more playmaking.
Yeah.
But honestly, I kind of want to see that go through Paul George a little bit more. I think he rushed himself last season because there was all this pressure on him getting back. Then when he came back, it was about, oh, we need the offensive injection. And he just kind of focused on that. He was a little bit too trigger happy.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to see Paul George go back into himself a little bit as the playmaker that we know he can be and say, okay, guys, you know what? We have a need here. We have a need for someone to get into the offense and set people up. And you know what? I'm that guy. I can do that because he's a fine, fine passer. He just never have had the chance to really put it onto display. And I think this might be the year where he can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. On paper, you know, they went into the offseason saying we need a point guard and they've done absolutely nothing to address that. Like, Reggie Jackson is still on the market, so...
Right.
Maybe they just bring him back and call it a day. He was, you know, they only had him for 17 games this last season. So,
oh, you know who'd be good there?
Who?
Kai Bowman. Defense. but defensively oriented. Like, when I interviewed him for Forbes, I was talking about him, like, both of the point guard position because, you know, he came into the league as an off guard. And, you know, in Golden State, he was cast more as a point guard. And when I was speaking to him about these things, he was like, no, I'm taking like the point guard spot very, very seriously. Like, he wants to get into, like, setting others up. He really didn't care about his own shot necessarily. He wanted to be a good three-point shooter because, you know, Steph and Clay was around him. So you kind of feel a need to, I have to be a good shooter too. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, I think that's the mentality, at least, to come in. Like, a guy who plays hard on defense, passes, and takes open shots. Because you don't need more than that, right?
Yeah. No, I agree.
And you can get him for a min. I mean, why not?
Yeah. So let's go to Toronto now, because they had to obviously pivot after losing Marcus Gasol, Serge Ibaka. And they pivoted with one of my least favorite players in the entire NBA, Aaron Baines, two-year, $14.3 million, second-year team option.
You're horrible. You hate Baines so much just because he beat your team.
He just, like, that effing outlier shooting performance will be scorched into my brain forever. But, I mean, it turned out to not be an outlier shooting performance because he actually took 4 three-point attempts per game last year and shot 35.1 from deep. So, it, you know, as it turned out, this he's had this in his bag the whole time. He just waited to break it out right before he started beating the Sixers.
Yeah. Yeah, he wanted to hurt you specifically. Absolutely.
He accomplished his goal. But, yeah. I mean, what do you think of Baines in Toronto? Can he be a facsimile of what they had in Ibaka and Gasol?
Well, I mean, no. There are limitations to Aaron Baines. Like, I know NBA Twitter is infatuated with him, and I get that he's an unorthodox, interesting, effective player. I'm not disputing that whatsoever, but he doesn't give you the passing component and the play understanding of a Marc Gasol, and he doesn't give you the reach, the athleticism, and honestly, the raw defensive intelligence of Serge Ibaka. You know what? This is something we never talk enough about when it comes to Serge Ibaka. He was a guy who, when he came into the league, relied on athleticism a ton, like swatting 3 shots a game, almost 4 actually 1 year. And people were like, oh, he's one of those high risers. He's a high jumper. And then his blocks kind of stopped, you know, having those high totals. And people were like, oh, is he losing his touch? No. He understood at a somewhat early age even, hey, you know what? Sometimes I'm chasing these shots where if I actually prioritize proper positioning, I'm going to do my job much better and much more efficiently. So, like, that is a huge, huge loss from Toronto, not having a guy who can think out the defense that way. And Baines, while he's great and while he does a good job at guarding the basket, he's just not that intuitive. And then when you also combine it with the fact that he's not that athletic, let's be honest, it just puts a lower cap on what he can do. But for the value and for their need, he's fine. It's fine. I thumbs up for that signing. I'm a little bit upset because it ruined my idea. I had a Thaddeus Young to Toronto trade all lined up because I thought that made sense. They didn't have any bigs. And, you know, then they made these signings, and that makes a lot more sense than trading for Thad Young. So, go down Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's choosing between Aaron Baines or Mason Plumlee, who actually got a higher AAV from Detroit, yes, you choose that every time. I mean, no, he's not going to – again, like, the passing vision of Gasol is going to be really hard to replace, and Baines is certainly not going to be able to do that. So I think you'll see even more of the offense flow through Fred VanVleet, who re-signed for 4 years, $85 million. Kyle Lowry, Pascal Siakam, you know, even OG possibly. We'll see. I mean, he came out last year, was a vastly improved player. Who's to say he doesn't have more creation and better handling when he comes back?
It's a big ask though, because his body is just not built in that fluid way, if you catch my drift. Like, he won't be like circling his way through defenders.
Yeah, he's more of a a Mack truck.
Yeah, right. Like, he's more mechanical. That's not to say he's not fantastic, but oh Lord, I mean, if there is a guy that, you know, teams should really try to trade for and really consider giving up the farm, who's never made the rounds, it's him. Like, this is like all NBA defense, first team caliber. You know, solid rebounding, can hit the three, but and like his stats are just they're so raw in the sense of what he can do. So people look at it and go, oh, he's only an 11-point player. Like, no. He played on a loaded team. Like, yeah, this is what I'm looking forward to for Toronto next year. That's the top of my list. What does Oche Anunoby does what does he do now?
Yeah. And look, I mean, the Bane signing, if nothing else, you know you're going in the East, you're going up against Joel Embiid in Philly, Brooke Lopez in Milwaukee, Bam Adebayo in Miami. You need a legit big to go up against some of those guys. Aaron Baines, if nothing else, is physical, and he can, you know, he's matched wits with that. He, you know, played in Boston for a while before going to Phoenix last year, so he's used to this kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, to, you know, they weren't going to find a perfect replacement for Ibaka and Gasol, but especially given where they were in the market, given the bigs that already come off the board, I think this is just about the best they could have done.
Yep, I would agree.
So let's go to Boston next, because they also bolstered their big man depth chart by signing Tristan Thompson 2 years for the full MLE, according to Chris Fedor. I believe he's of Cleveland.com. They also got Jeff Teague on a one-year vet minimum, according to Adam Himmelsbach of the Boston Globe. So let's hit Tristan first. Do you think he moves right into the starting lineup, replaces Daniel Theis?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of talent there. I don't necessarily think it's something that is written in stone as working moving forward, because Daniel Theis gives the Celtics a lot of versatility and a lot of different looks. So if push comes to shove and you go into like a and you go up against a dynamic team, I could see the logic in going, hey, you know what? Daniel should be our starting center tonight. And you know how I've spoken to you about dynamic starting lineups before? I think this is a very good situation of where I wanted to see that for the Celtics, where you basically say, you know what? The center position is flexible on a night-to-night basis, because Tristan can work in against certain matchups, but other matchups you just need, you know, Daniel Theis's flexibility both offensively and defensively. So this is going to be interesting. I wouldn't even be surprised to see both of them get, you know, significant starts. If they split 41-40, oh yeah, they can't do it 41-41 because it would be 82 game schedule. But
36-36,
that would be fun. But I wouldn't be surprised if that starting slot is somewhat of an open door. But what's more interesting to me, it's not really the fit or the signing necessary, it's the contract. Because last year, remember how every center in the damn game got, you know, around $5 million a year? That's changed. The center dollars are coming back.
Yeah. I mean, the full MLE for Tristan? I have to wonder if they can thank, if all centers owe a 10% commission to the Lakers.
No, seriously, you think that? I mean, I understand many people running with that narrative, but you really think it's that? Like, they played their best brand of basketball in the finals when they won small, if anything.
I know, but, you know, it happens every year where teams overreact to the team that won the title. They're like, Warriors. That's
so dumb.
It was like, we have to just completely abandon bigs. We can't beat them with bigs. And, you know, it almost worked for some teams where they did do that, and now the Lakers won with a lot of bigs. So it's like, oh, we got to counter their size. We need someone. Got to bring it. But ignoring that they brought in Dwight for a minimum last year, and the JaVale, I think he was on the biannual or the room exception. Like, he was on a much lower deal than the full MLE. So, yeah, I am surprised by that, too. I mean, I wonder if part of it is also just that's how the market broke. Like, they're, you know, in terms of talent alone, they were probably more talented big men. I mean, you know, when we ranked, we went through the free agent class back during the hiatus, and, you know, the point guards, it was like Fred VanVleet, Goran Dragic, and
was a rough episode. I remember
it dropped off really quickly, and then we got to power forwards, like, oh crap, we're going like 8 or 9 down the list before we before we start like really hitting the dregs here. So it could be part of that too, but yeah, I am surprised to see you know, the full MLE for guys like Ibaka or Tristan, you know, taxpayer MLE, maybe. I wouldn't have expected a full, you know, the non-taxpayer.
Nope. I think it's interesting. It shows that the center position is not dead, which is something I've been saying for a while. And honestly, it does feel like it's more so the power forward position that has gone, you know, the side of the road, which again, I also said as much. So I'm very pleased that the NBA seems to be listening to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tristan, too, had like the quietest 12.10 rebound season you'll ever see last year. You know, it's not like this guy's washed at all or like, you know, when he was playing with LeBron, Kevin Love, Kyrie, his stats were never that great. It was mostly just score the occasional bucket and just rebound your ass off and play good defense. And that's what he'll be doing in Boston. Like, I don't think he's going to average 12-10 next year because they've got so many mouths to feed with Kemba, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. But, you know, is he probably going to average 10 rebounds a game? That would not surprise me, depending on how they divvy up minutes between him and Tice. But I'm with you. I think the matchup based who starts, or at least like having a quick hook. If you're going to say Tristan is the starter every game, or if Daniel Tice is the starter every game, and you're going against, you know, a burlier big like an Embiid, like a Jokic, maybe that's when you go more Tristan. When you're going against a, you know, more of a finesse big, Kristaps Porzingis, Karl Anthony Towns, then you can lean a little more Daniel Tice. So
yeah, exactly.
I trust Brad Stevens, who many people would take to build a franchise over Giannis. So
I was about to say that. that has become our go to when it comes to Brad Stevens. Like, we cannot bring up Brad Stevens without bringing up that people would take him over Giannis. Yep.
It was like the perfect encapsulation of overreactionary NBA Twitter, where it's like, this guy won one playoff series, he's the GOAT coach ever. Take him over Pop, take him over Giannis. Was just, and it wasn't, it was Mannix had that, but I think Nate Silver also had a tweet along those lines. It's just like, guys, what are we doing here? You never take a coach over a player that good. But with that said, I mean, Brad Stevens, you know, not a two-time MVP caliber coach, but is a very good coach. And I like the Teague signing there too. He was on my board for the Sixers to get him at a vet man, especially, you know, they were trotting out Brad Wanamaker as their primary backup point guard last year. I know Jeff Teague isn't what he once was, but Jeff Teague is just an experienced, steady-handed point guard. He'll give them some nice scoring lift off the bench, which they might need more with after losing Gordon Hayward for nothing because Danny Ainge overplayed his hand.
Also had to bring that up. Yeah. No, I agree.
Had to dig that knife.
Jeff Teague at least can, you know, score the basketball, which I think helps.
Yeah.
Ultimately. And the Sixers, for some reason, when it comes to their bench last season, just did not prioritize that whatsoever. So, yeah, no. This is definitely an improvement. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the Sixers roster, they still don't have a single actual point guard. It's a mild concern of mine, but it doesn't sound like they're going to address it either, because Morey went out yesterday and was like, we're not spending the taxpayer mid-level yet.
Well, hey, I brought up Kai Bowman, minimum, right there.
I know.
Right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's still Shabazz Napier is also just floating out there for someone to please grab. But
yeah, why Reggie has Jackson, he not Kai been Bowman, signed? Why has Shabazz Napier not been signed? That one, it puzzles me. Like, he's good.
I mean, it makes me wonder if he's holding out for more than a minimum and no one's offering it.
Right, because nobody has any money left.
Right. Morey basically said we're not spending the taxpayer mid-level because we just don't know what our biggest needs are yet. Like, we want to go into the season, see how it plays out. A month from now, we'll have a much better idea of what we actually need. And then, you know, get to the trade deadline after, you know, the buyout market, you can have more money to offer than other people. So that's an advantage. But, yes, I'm hoping they have, whether it's Bowman, Napier, Reggie Jackson, Tyler Johnson even, they just, like Seth Curry and Shake Milton are their nominal backup point guards, I guess. But that has some real Achilles heel potential for the Sixers. But again, for the Celtics getting Teague, you know, it's like a 1 year vet, man. There's literally not a single player in the league where I'm going to criticize getting him on a 1 year vet, man.
No. I agree.
What's the harm?
Yeah.
Let's go to Atlanta because we haven't heard, I don't believe, that the deadline is today. We're recording on Tuesday afternoon. I think it's within the next hour or two. They signed Bogdan Bogdanović to a 4-year, $72 million offer sheet. Sam Amick of The Athletic reported they feel very, very confident in their ability to actually land him. It sounds like the Kings are reluctant to match at that price.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Bogdanović, his fit with the Hawks, and just in general, like, I mean, the Hawks have added a ton of talent this offseason, especially if they get Bogdanović, but is their rotation almost getting too crowded at this point?
It's right up there where you're kind of worried about it to some extent, but also the fact that this is going to be a pretty weird season with so many moving factors, I kind of like their depth. Because then if something doesn't really work out, we can pivot into something else. But you're right. I mean, look at the front line. They drafted Onyeka Okongwu at 6, and he's up against a ton of guys. Like, thank goodness they traded Dwayne Dedmon. But then when they brought in Dedmon, they got, or when they traded out Dedmon, they got in Tony Snell. Okay, Tony Snell plays the same position as Bogdan Bogdanović. So, and as does, you know, Cam Reddish. And then you have DeAndre Hunter, who is the 3-4. And you have Kevin Herter, who's a 2-3. So,
and then Gallinari and John Collins as well.
Right. It suddenly becomes difficult.
There
are definitely a lot of people to satisfy at once. I would say as much. I do wonder if they speak to these players and go, you know what we want? We want the deepest team in the East, just in terms of talent. And we want to beat teams because of that depth. Because that's not something we've associated with Atlanta before. But it's not a bad idea necessarily, because whoever gets pushed to the bench here, which presumably would be Kevin Herter, DeAndre Hunter, I'm imagining, and, well, let's see. Onyeka Okongwu was probably not going to start over Clint Capela. So, so that's going to be a trio off the bench of Okongwu, Hunter, and Herter. Which, that is not bad. That is not a bad, like, primary three-man rotation off the bench. And then Cam Reddish, of course.
Right.
Cam Reddish, that's the top four. That's a hell of a bench to throw out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean and you, Rondo and Chris Dunn in there as well. Like, they go legit 11 deep.
Forgotten about Rondo.
I mean, blocking that out. He's gonna have the same role that he did with the Lakers this last year, where he's just like, you don't expect much out of him. You definitely don't need him as a scorer, but he'll be that steady second unit presence. Just runs the offense and gets out of the way.
But then why add Dunn as well? That one tickles me a little bit. Like, what is it, because that you want him to play as an off guard? Which, okay, fine. Like, okay, no, I can see that. Offensively, there's nothing, though.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what we were talking about last episode, too. It's like Lloyd Pierce has his work cut out for him trying to figure out his rotations here, because I would not like to see many Rondo, Chris Dunn lineups. But, I mean, hell, maybe you're right. Maybe it is just a depth play and, like, you know, we'll give Rondo some nights off. We'll give Chris Dunn some nights off. We'll give Gallo some nights off. And, you know, what you were saying earlier, when they're talking to these players, I wonder with Bogdan and Gallo in particular, if they're saying, look, we'll give you your money now because we want, you know, we think you guys can help us get back into the playoff picture. But we'll also be honest, like, we're one of your best options in terms of getting the money you want. But, like, these are pretty tradable contracts. Bogdan Bogdanović at $18 million, Gallo at $21 million. Yep. Like, I can't help but wonder if they are just quietly amassing the chips they need for, like, a superstar trade.
Oh, Absolutely. I think that's something every team considers when they sign a player to that type of contract. You know, mm-hmm. because like if we can combine it, then what? If we add draft picks, then what? If we add the number six overall pick in Onyeka Okongwu, then what does that do? They have a lot of components that they can move around, for sure. And it's just a question of identifying what young star wants out. And when that happens, you know, go right ahead.
So we should basically prepare ourselves for a Trae Young, Bradley Beal backcourt.
I wouldn't hate it.
I wouldn't either.
There'd be no defense whatsoever, but I'd still like it because they'd both be dropping 30.
Right. Yeah, it's like those guys can be the salary match, and then if you're not willing to match, or if you're not willing to extend John Collins, you got to make a decision on him soon. You have right. Hunter, Herder, Cam Reddish, Okongwu. Like, you have a lot of young mid to high lottery guys that you can offer as the premium chips in these trades. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, going into the offseason, I said Atlanta, because of all their cap space, they were poised to really make a charge up the Eastern Conference standings.
Right.
And, I mean, honestly, you know, poised to, like, kind of set their future for the next half decade. And I think they've done a pretty good job of it. I don't think they handed out any completely unreasonable contracts, like nothing like the Hornets' Gordon Hayward nonsense.
No, well, Rondo was, I don't like that one.
Yeah, it was like, what, it was 2 years, $15 million?
Yeah, that's like, about 2 years and $15 million too much, if you
ask. I know, it's not going to completely devastate them, is my point.
Of course not, of course not.
So, I really, really like what Atlanta is doing. We'll see what the Kings do in terms of Bogdanović. We should find out later today. But what do you think? There have been rumblings since this offer sheet came out that, you know, the Kings are basically deciding between Buddy Hield and Bogdanović, which we've known for 8, 9, 10 months now. But it sounds like trade interest in Buddy Hield is more tepid than I would have expected.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think necessarily they are... They're choosing of anyone. I think they're letting both of them go. I don't think this is like, if they let Bogdanović walk, I don't think that precludes them from making a heel trade, because he, you know, by all accounts, he's not answering the phone from his kid coach. So I don't know what this is. If this is a pivot to a rebuild that starts with De'Aaron Fox, I'm not going to sit here and guess, because I have no idea. What they've done so far is pretty illogical. It's the Kings.
Yeah.
And as was it Sam Amick? I think it was Sam Amick off The Athletic who had, you know, they have the snippets on The Athletic. It's not necessarily an article, but like a sort of brief form analysis of something. And he basically said that Vivek Ranadive was trying to run the show again.
Yeah, right.
And so basically, whenever we hear that, I just check out on the Kings mentally. I just go, well, you know what? Then there's no rhyme or reason for anything that they do. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, some guy who's with, you know, complete insane thoughts and ideas of how to build a championship team or just a team that's running the show, and you can just forget about adding reason to it. I mean, 1, 2, 3, let's go, Nick, right? I mean, this is...
Wait, didn't he have the let's cherry pick every
yes.
session?
Oh yeah, he was the 4-on-5 yeah. guy as well. So no, I mean, I think they should have kept both. I think the trio of Fox, Hield, and Bogdanović as the 1, 2, 3 is the way to go. For some reason, they wanted different things, and they stuck Buddy Hield on the bench, and it didn't work. And I mean, it didn't surprise me. Like, let's be honest here for a second. Wouldn't you want a team of Fox at the 1, Hield at the 2, Bogdanović at the 3, Barnes at the 4, Bagley at the 5, but then with a coach who's very offensively inclined who just goes, go score?
Yeah, just like go run out and score. Yes.
Right. That team would average 120 a game.
Yeah.
There's a reasonable chance that they could win 45 games just off of outscoring people. Like, okay, they would get absolutely taken out in the playoffs because of, you know, defensive opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But they would still make the playoffs, I think, because in today's regular season, there's a chance, a very reasonable chance, because you have a point guard who can just speed up the floor. Then you'd have two shooters in Hield and Bogdanović flanking him. You would have a rim roller or a pick and roll threat in Bagley. And then you have Harrison Barnes, this small ball four who can both bully a little bit, who can both shoot a little bit, who can figure out his own way in the half court. Like, there's so many opportunities there with that lineup. And the Kings just go, well, we don't see it. Let's get Luke Walton in here.
Right.
Like, oh, man. Like, I was talking to someone within the league. This is, like, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just talking to him about, like, the Kings in general. And he was like, well, you know, a lot of people would like NBA jobs. So, you know, the Kings would be one of those, you know, there are only 30 jobs, like the big job, the GM job.
Right.
So that would always be attractive. And then I asked, what about like the non-GM jobs, but like front office jobs, where there's significantly more of? What about the Kings then? Got tired of the quiet bootman and went, well.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're totally right. Like they had the blueprint for... Yes, I don't think that team is winning anything substantial, but the Kings haven't made the playoffs in how long? Like 14 years at this point?
I don't know. It's you know, like, you know what the worst thing is? I don't know, and I don't even care. Like I reached that point where, you know, we are writers. It's our job, and podcasters, it's our job to actually get into like the heart of the matter with every single team in the NBA, all 30 franchises. The Kings, though, is that one exception where if you more or less read the headline with them, it's the truth. Like normally when you read weird-ass headlines, you always say, oh, there's more to the story. Let's dig into this. With the Kings, it's almost always as it seems. It's almost always as dumb as it seems.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really... unfortunate. If they lose Bogdanović for nothing, it's just a complete own goal on their end. Because if they knew they weren't going to match, like, they had to know he was going to get an offer sheet right around
really
this range.
So? Do you think that, can you really assume that they know stuff? I don't know. Look, this is a team that took Marvin Bagley over Luka Doncic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to harp on that point, but think about it. This was a team that had an international GM.
Yeah.
An international owner. And they go, nope, let's take Marvin Bagley out of Duke University. What? Like, come on. You can't assume professionalism. You can't assume logic on these people.
Right. Like, if they were competent, because anyone could have projected, okay, there are a few teams with cap space, Atlanta is the one team that is, you know, not in the early stage of the rebuild. They're trying to add veteran talent. Who's one of the best veteran wings on the market? Oh, it's Bogdan Bogdanović. Yeah. Okay, they're probably going to sign him to an offer sheet. And then it happened. You could have seen the tea leaves in February and said, okay, if we're not willing to match $18 million a year on Bogdan Bogdanović, we need to trade him now because we're not going to make the playoffs and we're going to lose him for nothing.
I feel bad for Monty McNair.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this is his doing. I really don't. Everything you read about him was that he came in prepared. That he was one of those guys who crossed every T, dotted every I. And I would not be surprised whatsoever if in a couple of years from now, an article is going to come out that basically just tells the whole story of how he never got a chance to implement his own vision.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. And we're saying all this, you know, fully knowing that in an hour the news could break that they do match this offer sheet, which I think would be the smart play. Like, for the Kings, you don't have to make this decision right now on Hield or Bogdanović, because as you said, they very well might lose both at some point.
Yeah. Do you think, though, they will match? Because, like, why wait until the final buzzer?
It's a dick move to lock up the Hawks cap space for 48 hours and prevent them from signing other free agents.
What else is out there?
Like the Hawks Whiteside?
oh no, he's not going to be available afterwards. Like, come on. Like,
yeah,
well, no, who are they going for? Tristan Thompson? Like, no. KCP? Hell no. DeMarcus Cousins? Juancho Hernan Gomez? No. Like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I think it is. It is the typical strategy, regardless of whether you're going to match, unless it's like such an obvious you're doing it that you do it right away.
Yeah.
Teams often do wait until the buzzer just to screw over the team that screwed them over. And, you know, it kind of sends a message like, don't do this again or we're going to lock your cap space up for 48 hours.
See, I don't get that because, like, you know, the whole retaliation ideology. Like, this is within the rules. This is the CBA. Like, if you don't re-sign a guy or extend a guy in time and he hits restricted free agency, like, then what do you expect?
Yeah, it's in the rules, but it's in the rules that they can wait the full 48-hour clock before making a decision.
Of course, of course. My point is just this, like, if you want to be a dick about it.
Yeah, right. Like why be vengeful?
Right, then just lock up your guy. If you're like, oh, I'm just going to wait it out, then lock up your guy and then, you know, drop the pretenses. But again, it's fine. I'm just expecting the worst when it comes to Sacramento. I will say this. I hope that right now Monty McNair is literally fighting with Vivek Ranadive about matching Bogdan Bogdanovic.
Yes.
That I hope. I hope Monty McNair comes out victorious. And then I hope after that fight, he puts his boxing gloves back on and go, and you know what? You better keep Buddy Hield, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, for real.
Because they can still run out that lineup I talked about earlier. That lineup is still there, and there is Tyrese Haliburton added to it now, right, off the bench. So, you know, there are chances here. There are opportunities. It's just a matter of don't trip over your own feet.
Yeah, when you're a bad franchise like the Kings, you cannot afford to lose good talent like Bogdanović for nothing.
Right. Right.
It's yeah.
I loved how we spent the first 5 minutes of this just blatantly assuming they wouldn't match because it's the Kings, and then first after 5 minutes it kind of hit us. Oh, they might actually match, because who knows if for once they'll act like a competent NBA organization.
I mean, you know, based on the tone of Sam Amick's reporting, it sounds like they're not going to. But, well, you know, I think it's worth addressing, hedging and saying, well, you know, what if they do, just in case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, if someone is plucked into the Kings, it's Sam Amick.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, since you brought up Boogie, let's mention him, because he is going to the Houston Rockets on a 1 year, I believe it's a vet min deal as well.
Right.
We haven't seen him in a while. I mean, you know, this is assuming he can stay healthy, which is, unfortunately, it's a pretty big assumption at this point of his career. But if he can stay healthy, what do you think of his fit there?
This is where I feel you're putting me on the spot. You're asking me about the fit in Houston, knowing full well that that organization right now is catching on fire and everything is bad, and we have no idea whatsoever, you know, what's going to happen over the next 2 weeks. I'm going to say, Brian, I have no clue. I have no clue. he could come in immediately and just be the slow-footed interior big man. He could come in and just get up threes because he's a decent shooter. He could come in and not earn a single minute because they find something else that works. I have no idea. Right now, it's the Rockets, so I have no idea what to expect from that team whatsoever. They want to go into this season hanging on to James Harden, which, mm-hmm, fine. But what if a couple days before the season starts, the Philadelphia 76ers make Ben Simmons available?
Right.
Then what?
Right. Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, it's like, again, a one-year vet min, it's worth the gamble on the upside, because if he is, he's not going to be his former 25-point, 10-rebound, 5-assist former self, I don't think.
Oh, my. Did you just trash Cousin? He was so much more. He was like a 27-12 guy.
Oh, okay, fine. Whatever he was.
No, but he was that good. He was good.
And it's worth the gamble at a one-year min deal, especially if he's going to be backing up Christian Wood. Like, that's cool. You know, he, on paper, he fits very well next to James Harden. You know, I saw, I forget who I was talking to last night, but someone mentioned, like, I hope this is a precursor for a Westbrook-John Wall trade, because John Wall and Boogie have been trying to play together forever.
Yeah. You know what? That one, if you will allow me to play revisionist historian for a moment.
Yeah.
That one should be one of the biggest regrets as NBA fans for us, that we never saw that pairing while healthy. Both of the, those guys have torn their Achilles, by the way, which is just heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But that pairing in their heyday would have been outstanding. Like, think about it for a second. That would be, it would have been a little bit reminiscent of the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns after they acquired Shaq. Because then they had this philosophy, 7 seconds or Shaq. Basically, they just let their wings leak out, Nash in the middle, and then if that fast break got stopped, okay, you turned it into a half-court possession where Shaq got the ball in the paint and you kind of worked out of that. You could have done that in a DeMarcus Cousins-John Wall combo, especially if you flanked the ever-living hell out of them with shooters. That combination would have been just so much fun to watch. I think it would have been one of those we really look back on if it had happened as, oh, that's one of the great 1-2 punches. Maybe not one to never win a ring, but, I mean, they would have made numerous All-Star games together. Mm-hmm. Huge regret. It's such a shame that they won't link up necessarily until way after, you know, their bodies betrayed them.
Yeah. But they still could. So
they still could. Well, and they're great friends. So on that part, I hope for them it happens.
Me too. So let's wrap up first with the Bucks. They got 2 depth pieces in Torrey Craig and Bryn Forbes. I don't think I've seen the financial details for either, but I'm guessing both are on min deals.
I think, yeah, that could be right. I seem to recall seeing a number attached to Bryn Forbes, but I'll be honest with you, I don't remember it because there have been so many numbers reported recently on a multitude right. of players. But what I do remember is that those were both very, very solid pickups. I loved that for him. And I think, you know, the Bucks, even though they did not get Bogdan Bogdanović this offseason, mm-hmm. they've done really, really well.
Yeah, I know they're getting dunked on because of Bogdanović, and then John Hollinger of The Athletic laid out how they screwed up with Pat Connaughton and had they originally signed him to a 2-year deal. They couldn't. They ended up signing him to a 3-year, $16 million deal. So, like, the Bucks front office has made some mistakes at the exact worst time to do so. But, you know, on paper, they're much better than they were last year. They've right. added Drew Holiday, getting Torrey Craig, Bryn Forbes, DJ Augustine, Bobby Portis. Those are impactful rotation players. They lost Eric Bledsoe, George Hill, Robin Lopez, Ersan Ilyasova. They're better than they were last year. Like, yep. I think the conversation around the Bucks this offseason just seems weird because of some of their screw-up. I think it's similar to the Clippers. Like, the Clippers have suffered some big losses, but they are still better than what they were last year.
Yeah, I think so, too. Oh, by the way, just to wrap up Pat Connaughton. So, yeah. Didn't he get double the money for just one additional year?
Yeah, somewhere more or less, yeah.
I love that. Good for Pat, man. Good.
Yeah, I like get that money, Pat.
Yep.
And then let's wrap up more, since we were talking about bad franchises, let's wrap up with the New York Knicks, who have brought in, they're running it back with their 1-year plan, with one exception, but they brought Nerlens Noel, 1 year, $5 million. Alfred Payton, who was with them last year, they right. waived him. He was supposed to get $8 million. Now he's on 1 year, $5 million. So yeah. he had $1 million guaranteed. So they ended up saving $2 million on him. And Austin Rivers, 3 years, $10 million. What do you think of what the Knicks are doing?
I mean, they're not panicking.
Yeah,
they're making reasonable contracts, like, or signing, you know, players to reasonable contracts. They're doing, you know, what's very un-Knicks, which is, you know, they're acting rationally. I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, you know, they have a good team all of a sudden, because it's
no.
there are still a lot of needs in that organization. But from how they've acted this offseason, I think there's reason to be optimistic about, you know, their long-term outlook, because if they are going to act with this level of patience moving forward, that's good. They've always been a franchise that's panicked and then struggled while they panicked. And this seems like they're basically catching their breath and they're going, okay, we have time. Like, people can't think any less of us than they already do. It's literally impossible. So let's just get this right. Even if it takes 5 years, let's just get this right. And they are.
And I wonder, you know, last year they did something very similar, signing guys to two-year deals with second-year team options or, like, very small guarantees in the second year, which pretty much all of them they waived. I wonder if that experience, like, if they tried to flip more of those guys at the deadline and other teams just didn't have the requisite salary matching pieces they need.
Right.
So this time they're like, okay, cool. Nerlens at $5 million, Elfrid Payton at $5 million, Austin Rivers 3 years, $10 million. Like, those are smaller contracts, should be easier to salary match for. You know, I don't think any of those guys have a long term future with the Knicks, but like, maybe those guys are more tradable and then they can actually turn them into future, you know, second round picks or whatever. Because that was my whole beef with what the Knicks did last offseason. Okay, cool. You didn't piss away long-term cap space. That's great. It's a very low bar to clear, but you cleared it.
Yeah.
But, like, the only thing, the only one of your signings that you turned into anything was Marcus Morris, and you got a first-round pick out of him. Good. That is genuinely good.
Right.
But the rest of it was just wasted cap space.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, we'll see what happens here, but, you know, hopefully they can actually turn these guys into something that will help their long-term future, because that is the point. Or otherwise, just get involved with these salary dumps, and, like, you should have taken Al Horford, and then you could have gotten a first and a second or whatever, you know, like...
That would have been smart.
Right. These are the types of things you should do if you're not going to... If the guys that you sign aren't part of your long-term future and aren't going to be any... Like, you're not going to be able to flip them for anything. They're just going to take up space and cap space for a year, and they're going to go on their own way. That's not helping you at all.
But baby steps, Brian. Baby steps. Know, they're just realizing that they shouldn't be incompetent anymore. That's a big step. Right.
Like, they just realized they're rebuilding.
Right. They're just realizing, oh, if we don't panic, that's good. That's where we are. You have to be realistic in terms of your expectations at, you know, the certain stage that they're in. You know, maybe next year they'll realize, oh, draft picks, good.
right.
More draft picks, better. Huh. And there you go from there, right? It's a slow, it's the slow burn.
Yeah. No, you might be right. I'm grading them on too harsh a curve, which is the same grade I grade every other team.
Right. Just,
They're
that high school guy that you kind of worry will kill himself, so you give him a higher grade to get some confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, look, if nothing else, they didn't sign Gordon Hayward to a four-year, $120 million contract. So they're having a better offseason than the Hornets.
Right. Well, and you know what, Knicks? See, that is exactly why you shouldn't harm yourself. You did not sign Gordon Hayward. That is the bar that we're holding you to. Great job, Knicks.
Yeah. All right, Mort, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all for listening. For the American listeners out there, hope you have a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we recorded this episode live on Locker Room. So if you're on iOS, download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out with us. We're going to have a lot of podcasts in the next few weeks because the season is like a month away. So we have a lot of stuff to preview and get out of the way and try to figure out who the hell is on the Oklahoma City Thunder roster. Please come hang out with us, and you can do all of that live on the Locker Room app.
Yeah.
Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, good luck. I know you're starting your internship tomorrow. Good luck. Kill it. And
thank you.
Let's talk soon.
And for Yes, definitely. And, you know, I hope everyone has a real good Thanksgiving, you know, celebrating genocide. It's fantastic for you guys. Just eat your body weight in turkey and ignore the very awful things that your ancestors did. Congratulations on your great success, America.
Because so many people are socially distancing for Thanksgiving, like not seeing their families, there's actually been a run on small turkeys and not big turkeys. Like, because, you know, you're only having like your immediate family. So, yeah, the days of the 18-pound turkey, they might actually survive this year, and then they're going to be slaughtered for next year's Thanksgiving.
Wow. Well, that totally makes up for what you did against the Indians or Native Americans.
Yeah. All right. Catch you later, Mort.
Later, Brian. Don't die.